The Apostle Paul said a very profound statement in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10. He said, "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil." I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. "And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." The love of money. Now, this is a well-known statement. It's been quoted many, many times. Some people miss the statement and they say, money is the root of all evil. And they forget that the phrase is the love of money. And then they'll say, money is the root of all evil. But the Greek language does not have a specific definite article before root. So it should read, the love of money is a root. It's one type of root of all kinds of evils. What kinds of evils? Prostitution. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, what does the Bible say? In verse 29, do not degrade your daughter by making her a prostitute, or the land will turn to prostitution and be filled with wickedness. When men sell their daughters, for what? For money. Prostitution. Women turn to it, men turn to it, or male prostitutes, women prostitutes. People will do and sell themselves for what? The love of money. I have to have the money. I have to have it. So money is a root, and it's a root right there of prostitution. Gambling. Why do people gamble? I love money. I want to get more money. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to win money. I'm trying to bet that this wins. And gambling is a root. And many people become addicted to gambling. They can't get out of it. There's Gamblers Anonymous, 12-step program for people who are addicted to gambling and who will go through one paycheck after another, will put themselves in severe debt, a root of evil. Drug dealing. Let's sell drugs. Why? Love of money. I need to have the money. I'm willing to sell drugs and get others addicted, sell it to kids in school, get them addicted. So why? I can have their money. Drug addiction or drug dealing. Pickpocketing. You know, people pickpocket. They'll steal. Armed robbery. Love of money. Thievery. Just thievery. Hijacking. Hijack your car. Cheating in various ways. The Bible condemns various weights. You know, people cheat you in the store. You're supposed to get 10 ounces, but you get 9.5. You're supposed to get a full gallon, but you don't get quite a gallon. You're supposed to get so many ounces of this, and you don't get it. Cheating, weights, different ways in which the stores and love of money. It's the love of money. You want to get more money. Lying. People will lie. Oh, yes, this is a really good car. Oh, yes, there's nothing wrong with this machine. Oh, no, this computer has never been broken. No, this is, and people will lie. Why? For love of money. The love of money is a root. It's not the only root, but it is one root of all kinds of evil. Lying, deceiving. False advertisements all the time. False advertisements. You see, you hear that it's not true. It's not the way it is, but they advertise it as though this were the right thing. False advertisements. Misleading advertisements. Why? Love of money. And boy, did they come across a good deal when they thought that Jesus was born on December 25th. Now, you go back, you go back in ancient history, I mean in history, not ancient, but in the Christian era. And about no one observed the birthday of Christ or even thought of it for the first couple of hundred years. And then they started deciding, well, I wonder when he was born. Maybe we should celebrate his birthday. And finally, in the 300s, the 4th century A.D., there were people who gathering together said, yeah, I think we ought to celebrate his birthday. Two of the early church fathers, or actually three of them, Origen, Tertullian, and Irenaeus fought against it. These three, what they call early church fathers who knew the scripture said, no, they didn't do it. The apostles never did it. Nobody did it. You don't see in the scriptures in the New Testament say, hey, well, what are you going to get for Christ's birthday? What are you going to do? What are you going to buy? Nothing. But later on, after they went across, and this was Constantine because he wanted to appease the sun god worshiping people of Rome, he decided, well, they are worshiping a sun god. And it's the birthday of the sun god is December 25th. Well, why don't we just say that Jesus, he's the Son of God, we'll just combine them, let everybody be happy, and we'll just bring all these pagans into Christianity and say that's Christ's birth. So you have the sun god, all the orbs, all the holly wreaths, the orbs, everything that's round, all that is an idea of the sun, the orbs, they're hanging all these little things on the tree. So why? Well, because the sun god. But then they decided, somebody saw it, that the Magi came to Jesus and they brought him gifts of these little, you know, things. And when you come to a baby, there's a little baby in a manger, you know, or in the feeding trough where he was laid. When you bring a gift to a baby, do you really bring it? You bring it to the parents, right? You bring it to the mother, you bring it to the parent. Because you give the baby a gift, it'll just lay there because the baby doesn't know anything about it. It's not going to do anything with it. So you bring it really to the mother or the father to give to the baby, to use for the baby. But so there they started. This is a great idea. This is a great idea, trading gifts. Now, if it were the way that people think it was, you'd have all these, the Magi coming, and they finally get to the baby, and they say, okay, Muhammad, or here's your gift, and then someone says, well, here's for you, John, and here's for you, Frank, and here's for you, and they would trade gifts in front of the baby, you know. That's not what they did. Now this has been used, and so listen to the love of money. We herd people into this very strong, socially pressured idea of you must get out and buy gifts for all your friends and relatives and people you know and business acquaintances. And of course, it's a big business thing, you know, and everybody's buying gifts. In fact, is in the United States and other countries that observe Christmas in a very big way, part of their economic success depends on everybody being herded into buying gifts. And the countries have now become so dependent on this massive spending for business, for the corporations to prosper, that if it doesn't happen, if people stay home and don't buy many gifts from the stores, it's considered a really downturn in the economy. We pressure people to get out and do this, thinking they're doing this for Jesus. And it was never a part of the Christian early Christian church, or even the first couple of hundred years of the church. False advertisement, mass hoarding into this mad rush of Christmas purchasing. What has it done for? For economic reasons, for the love of money. Kidnapping. Why do people kidnap somebody? You go down to some foreign countries and you could be kidnapped. Right here in the United States, you could be kidnapped if they think you got enough money and your parents or your relatives or your friends or your wife or your husband will spend money to get you back. Murder. Well, people murder for money all the time. That's nothing new. So it's a root of evil all the way to murder. Assault. Have you ever been assaulted? Muggings. You know, people have been mugged on the street. Women have gone down the street, been mugged, knocked down, somebody takes their purse. Purse snatching, of course, wallet pickpocketing, false documents, identity theft. Why do you think that's done? Love of money. Shoplifting, panhandling, breaking and entering, on and on and on. The list goes on. Why? Love of money. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. That's the only root, not the only root. And so Paul wrote into Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 3. You'll see it here, that phrase is used. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 2, for men will be, in the last times, men will be lovers of their self. It's a false respect to be a lover of yourself. I mean, selfish. I mean, when you love yourself, you put yourself so high in the way of life. I'm not talking about good self-esteem now. That's different. I'm talking about a false sense of self-worth in which you become the center of everything. I love myself so much. I'm better than everything, and I'm first in line. I should give myself first, and I put myself above every person. I wouldn't sacrifice me for nobody. That's the love of self. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. The love of money, that's what the end time, they said it will be the lovers of money. Boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful. There are other lovers here, you know, other things do you love? Lovers of pleasures in verse 4. They're not only treacherous, reckless, conceited, but they're lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. They're lovers of himself, they're lovers of money, they're lovers of pleasure, they're not particularly lovers of God. God falls down between from money, from self, money, and pleasures. Well, now we know money is neither good nor bad, right? Money is what? It's neither good nor bad. Money is just money. It's really a tool. It's really an instrument. It's really something you can use. It should not be a goal of life, because it can become a god. Money, however, is not the only temptation. In the book of Colossians, chapter 3, in verse 5, we read this. Put to death whatever in your nature belongs to this earth, this world. Sensual immorality, impurity, shameful passion, evil desire, and greed. Now, greed again comes back to lusting. Greed, which is idolatry. Greed takes you into idolatry. That's from the New English Translation. Let me read this in the same verse in the New International Revised Version. So put to death anything that belongs to your earthly nature. Get rid of your sexual sins and unclean acts. Don't let your feelings get out of control. Remove from your life all evil longings. Stop always wanting more and more. You might as well be worshiping statues of gods. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 19 says, and they have become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. Greed is also a form of the love of money, love of things. And chapter 4:5 of Ephesians in verse 3 says, but immorality and any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. Now, the Bible says, when Paul wrote that, he said, and some longing for this have wandered from the faith. Are we talking about that you lose your understanding of doctrine? You don't understand now the purpose of life. You don't understand God's Sabbath. You don't understand God's holy days. You don't understand doctrines. You don't understand the teaching of righteousness, of reconciliation. You don't understand justification by faith. You don't understand the doctrines. Is that what happens when you drift off? I don't think so. I think faith here has to do with a way of living. Godly living. They've wandered from godly living. When the love of money, have some having wandered, chased it, have walked off from godly living. If you want to know what the hallmark of the false teachers of the New Testament was, if you want to say, what? If you take false teachers of the New Testament, what is their, what do they teach? Greed, financial exploitation, along with sexual exploitation, and as well as claiming special knowledge or insight. That is the recurrent teaching of the New Testament of the characteristics of false teachers. Because if money becomes the ultimate goal, right, then it becomes like a god. The love of money can become idolatrous. It causes disastrous results in this life and in the next. Now, here's a parable that Jesus gave, and he was talking about money in this parable, but the principles that he brought out were totally rejected by the Pharisees. Look at it in Luke chapter 16. It's the parable of the unjust, called the unjust steward. You know, he realizes, oh, I'm going to get caught. I haven't really taken care of my master's finances that well, and now I'm going to get caught. And what does he do? He's the manager. And it was reported to the to him that he was squandering the master's possessions, you know, his manager's possessions. So what does he do? This is now Luke chapter 16, and I'm dropping down to verse 4. And he says, I know what I'll do before I get caught, before I get fired. I know what I'll do. That when I am removed from the management, people will welcome me into their homes. In other words, when I get thrown out of here, I'll have some place to go because I'll do people favors. So, verse 5, he summoned each person of his master's debtors, and he began saying to the first, how much do you owe my my master? And he said, well, I owe him 100 measures of oil. He hands him the bill, and he says, take your bill, sit down over here quickly, and write 50. Just scratch that off. Just write 50. So it's in your handwriting that, you know, like you paid. Then he said to another, how much do you owe? And he said, well, I owe 100 measures of wheat. And he said, well, here's, take your bill and write 80. And his master praised the unrighteous manager because when he found out, well, that was a clever, slick deal here. Now, I don't know whether it was his master or Jesus. This is a very difficult part of the interpretation. But the master praised the unrighteous manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. And again, Jesus said, and I say, do you make friends for yourselves by means of the wealth of unrighteousness? It's a wealth of unrighteousness. So he said, use it. It's an instrument. Use it to make friends with yourself. Now, don't steal from it. Don't do like he did and wreck your boss's business by giving it all away. He says, make friends by means of the wealth of unrighteousness. So when it fails, they will receive you into eternal dwellings. Means make real friends. Make Christian friends. Jesus said in verse 10, he who is faithful in a little thing is also faithful in much, and he who is unrighteous in a little thing is unrighteous also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust the true riches to you? You can't handle your own finances and the things you have. Who's going to trust the real riches? Now he says something very profound, and this is what the Pharisees disagree with. No servant, Jesus said in verse 13, Luke chapter 16, no servant can serve two masters. Verse 13, no servant can serve two masters. For he will either hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one, despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, the Greek word here is mammonas, and it means wealth. But in some translations, in the old New American Standard, used to have the word capitalized. But there's been some argument from scholars whether this was true of the Syrians, that the Syrians used that word as an Aramaic word, to say that this was like a god. They made it into a god, that wealth became a god. But it's not a big stretch. I don't know that you need to capitalize the word mammon. But here I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, updated, and it says, you cannot serve God and wealth. The word, Greek word is mammonas. Now the Pharisees, listen to verse 14, who were lovers of money. You see that in verse 14? Were listening to all these things and were scoffing at him. Ha! You don't think you can serve too? Well, we think we can serve too. Ha! You think you have to be faithful in what is little to be faithful in that which is rich? Ha! Do you think that if you don't use the righteous, the things that are righteous, that you won't be given the true riches? Ha! They just laughed at it. They scoffed at it. Because what were they? Lovers of money. And what would they do for the love of money? What did they do for the love of money? We got to end this guy's talking here. He's going to get us all in trouble. He's going to ruin the good thing we've got going. He's now teaching all this stuff, and this is not what we want to hear. The Pharisees who were loving the money, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things, were scoffing at him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. Now, Jesus said the same thing over in the book of Matthew. He's talking to his disciples, Sermon on the Mount, talking to the people there. And he says in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, no one can serve two masters. Now, think of it, it's your master. No one can serve two of them. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammonas, or wealth. Cannot serve two masters. Now think about it, serving them. You serve God, that's a form of worship. You serve wealth, that is also a form of worship, which makes wealth into what? A god. For this reason, I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat and what you will drink, nor for the body. As to what you will put on, is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow, nor reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? Now, one caveat here, one warning. Don't think that you can sit down and do absolutely nothing. Okay, why? Because even if you're a bird of the air, and God feeds the birds of the air, but the bird doesn't just sit there with its mouth open and God drops the seeds in it. What does the bird have to do? Bird has to fly around, find the seeds. There's plenty of food, but you got to find it and you got to go get it. It's not going to be dropped into your mouth. So there's a caveat here. Now the term wealth was from a Hebrew word that meant to store up, or to, in some cases, to entrust. It was originally used to denote a person putting his trust in another person by investing money with him. Okay, you got this business. Can I invest my money with you? Give you my money to invest. You put your trust in that person. So it came to mean, the wealth came to mean that in which one trusted. It seemed to emphasize the object on which was the basis of security. And one scholar asserted that this term was used by the Syrians for the name of their money god. Now, I say there are some scholars that argue with that. So we know money is not the problem. We know that. Money itself is not the problem. It's the love of money that's the problem. And the tragedy of money is that we never have enough, right? Isn't that there are people, I remember a conversation between two friends of mine, and I know them both, and I love them both. They're good families, both families, husband and wife. And one family had already retired and moved in this area, and they wanted their friends to retire and move. And they said, you know, why don't you come and retire and move with us? And the other person said, well, when we get enough money, we will. And the one that already had moved away said, they will never come. Why? When we get enough money, what is enough? What is enough? See, the love of money. The tragedy is that there's never enough. And if you get into that, it soon takes you over. It soon takes you over. It possesses you, so to speak, this love of it. And instead of you possessing it, the money possesses you, because the more we have, the more we want. And then when you get it, right, what do you got to do with it? You got to take care of it. You're worried about it. Who has to have insurance? Only if you have wealth, only you have stuff, you buy insurance. Why? So that somebody won't take it away from you, won't lose it. You don't have to insure if you have nothing. You think a bum on the street has much insurance? You think these people have a sign up, homeless, need food? You think they have a lot of insurance? They don't buy insurance. They have nothing to insure. You buy insurance to insure the things you have. It's a smart idea, because you don't want to have an enormous loss. So people who don't have anything have nothing to worry about losing. They don't lose anything. Now, they might be just as greedy. They might have just as much a love, and they might want to kill you or knock you off or rob you or pickpocket you, lie to you. Yes, I'm homeless, so I don't have any place. They might be doing that as well for the love of money. So people, when you gather wealth, then you often become consumed with protecting it. Now let's give you a kind of an overview of wealth as it's talked about in the scriptures, and especially in the Old Testament as we begin. First of all, we know that God is the owner of all things because he's the creator of all things. What did God create? Genesis 1. Genesis 2, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth and all that is in them. All that is in them, all the animals, all the trees, all the seas, all the gold, all the silver, all of this God created. And he put man on the earth to rule over it. So God created the heavens and the earth, all the animals and humans. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 11, it talks about yours is everything in the earth and the heavens. You own everything. God owns it, everything. When you're praying to God, who is God? He's the owner of everything. In the book of Psalms, several Psalms, I won't quote all, but in Psalm 24, verse 1, the earth is the eternal's and all that is in it. The earth is God's and everything there. So God owns it all. And what does God say in Isaiah? My hand, you know, where is the temple you're going to build for me? Isaiah 66, verse 2. What's the house you're going to make for me? I made all this stuff. You're going to build a house out of wood, out of silver, out of gold? I made it all. You're going to give me something? My hand has made all these things. So God is the owner of everything. What are we? Humans are stewards. We're stewards of the wealth. Steward means the one who has been entrusted with it, a steward of the wealth of God's, to use it for God's purposes. We're stewards of God's wealth. In the process of gaining these blessings, this wealth, we are admonished in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Don't forget God when you become wealthy. When you get houses to live in, your vineyards and your herds and your flocks multiply, don't forget God. Don't let your heart trust in those to the place, well, I don't need God. I don't have to have God. I've got everything. I've got wealth. I've got power, because wealth is a form of power. And in order to keep people in a humble way, to realize you don't have to grab everything. If you remember Leviticus chapter 19, there are admonishments. No, do not mow, don't glean to the very corners of your fields. You have a field, you know, a plot. You don't have to take every stalk of barley out of that. Leave some, he said. Leave it for the widows. Leave it for the stranger. Leave it for the orphan. Leave it for people who don't have as much. Now you have the land, you have the, you know, you're cultivating the land. It's so that you get an idea of generosity. Give some, leave some. In the book of Job chapter 31, Job says, and I won't read all these scriptures, Job 31, because we went over this before, in Job 31, beginning in 16 through 33, Job says, you know, I never forsook the widow. If you show me an orphan or the poor person that I ever turned my back on, I never forsook the widow or forsook the poor or forsook the orphan. I've never done that. And so Job is now trying to, you know, explain why am I being punished? Why have all these things come on me? But he's trying to say, look, I never did that. In Isaiah chapter 58, when God says, this is the fast, you know, what fast have I? You keep fasting around, you know, you fast for this, you fast for that. And he said, what's the fast I've chosen? You know, to do justice, plead the cause of the orphan, plead the cause of the widow. That's the fast I want. Don't come in here with all these other sacrifices. I want the cause of the orphan and the widow pleaded for. Wealth belongs to God. Everything that we see, everything that is here, every diamond, every jewelry, every piece of silver, every piece of gold, everything that you have on you, God made it. And we understand that. You own it if you have it. God, you are God's steward of all that you have. You are the steward of God. And you are to use it properly. Now, he talks about wealth as a part of worship. When you see the things about the tithes and the tenth and things like that in the scriptures, it has to do with the part of worship. You'll see it always is tied to worship. It's not tied to anything, to too much else. But now Numbers 18, in the book of Numbers 18, you know the Levites. Now a lot of people think that the Levites, because they got the tithe, were super rich. They were super rich. They were not. The Levites, because they did not have an inheritance, they had no land. So what God gave them was the mazer, the tenth of what other people raised, and the firstlings of the herds, the tenth of what was there. Now you read that here in the book of Numbers, chapter 18, dropping down to verse 21. The sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance. Now, who was the tithe originally for? Who was it supposed to be? You gave it to God. It was God. You gave it to, but God said, I'm going to give it to them. They don't have an inheritance as far as land. In return, that tithe is in return for the service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, or they will bear the sin and die. So only the Levites then, from that time on, all the Levites could come to the tent, you know, the tabernacle. Only the Levites could come for there. Only the Aaron could come up to the inside the tent. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout the generations and among the sons of Israel. For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Eternal, I have given, verse 24, to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, they shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. So the Levites couldn't own any land. They had no land. They had no inheritance, no land that they could pass on to their children or anything else. Their whole production was in serving the temple. And in serving the temple, people brought their tithes to the temple, the tithe of wine, of corn, of grain, and they gave it to the temple. Well, that was allowed the Levites to eat, and they could survive. Well, what happened if you didn't have a good year? What happened when the crops failed? The tenth got very small. You had a hard time, the Levites had a hard time. If the whole nation was in drought, the Levites had a very hard time. They often became very poor, very poor. They were classified in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 14, verses 28 and 29. They were classified with whom? With the widow and the orphan and the Levite. You see that in Deuteronomy chapter 14, dropping down to verse 28. At the end of the third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year and shall deposit it in your towns. The Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you, and the alien, the orphan, and the widow who are in your town shall come and eat and be satisfied. Levites were poor. Levites were not wealthy. They had no inheritance. They had no land. Now, we don't have Levites today. We just don't. We are all citizens of the United States. We work for a living. We do what we have. We have businesses. I have a profession. You have a business. We all have that. And that's what we have to do. So we work, we give our service, we get paid for our services, and that's what we do. So this is what God originally said. But all the tithe, most scholars, when they read this, say there were two tithes, one that went for the Levite, and one that people took and they saved it, and they took it, but on the third year, they deposited in the town for other people. But they thought there were two tithes, that these tithes were often done in the service of God and done at the feast. Now you'll see it here in Deuteronomy 14. You drop down to verse 22. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. You shall eat in the presence of the Eternal your God at the place which he chooses to establish his name. What shall you do with that tithe? You come before God and eat it. It's a part of the worship of God. These funds were, or tithes of grain, oil, you know, they were agricultural tithes, were done in service and worship to God. He comes to establish his name. You eat there the tithe of your grain, then your new wine, your oil, your firstborn of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear, worship, and fear the Eternal your God. If the distance is too much, then you shall take some of that tithe and turn it into money and make your way to that place where the God places his name. And when you exchange it for money and bind the money in your hand, go to the place in verse 25. You spend the money for whatever your soul desires, or eat and drink and so on, and you shall eat in the presence of the Eternal your God and rejoice you and your household. So part of that wealth that you get is to be used inside, for the worship of God, as well as for the orphan, the widow, and the poor Levite. In chapter 12, in verses 6 and 7, you see it as well. Therefore, you shall bring the burnt offering, sacrifice, tithes, and contributions of your hand, your votive offerings, free will offerings, your firstborn of your herd and flock, and you there also, you and your household shall eat before the Eternal your God and rejoice in all your undertakings in which the Eternal your God has blessed you. Money, wealth, because God owned it, was to be used, a great deal of it, a tenth of it, not all of it, you can use it, you're the steward. God owns everything. You're the steward. You use some of it in God's worship. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. Read this. Honor the Eternal from your wealth and from the first of all your produce. So shall your barns be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine. In other words, the idea is, if you put God first, you'll be somewhat blessed. Now, does it always hold? Is that an absolute principle? It's a general principle. Are all people who give to God first blessed financially? Not all of them. Now, part of it is maybe they're not too educated, or they're not too good, or they're lazy, or that's also a part. Proverbs, God gives wealth. Proverbs 3, verse 10, and 15, verse 6 says this: God gives wealth and blessings that go with it. Proverbs 3, verse 10, we just read that. Proverbs 15, verse 6, and so on. Now, there's a warning against wealth at the expense of others. You can't get wealthy at the expense of other people. You cannot do that in a way that hurts others. For instance, Proverbs 21, verse 6 says, getting rich by a lying tongue is forbidden. Remember, lying is a root, part of the root of all evils, one of the evils that comes from the love of money. You lie in order to get more. Jeremiah chapter 5, 26 to 29 says, getting rich by laying traps for others. He condemns it. People lay a trap for others. You fall in it, and I get rich because you fell in it. Believe me, there have been so many people swindled. Sign right here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, no. That's fine. You signed this deed. You didn't read the fine print. You didn't read it. They later go to a judge. Well, I'm sorry. You signed it. You said you read it, and you signed it. Now you've signed your inheritance away. You signed this deed over, or you don't have the property now, or they're foreclosing on you sooner than you thought because you signed this. You gave them the right to do that. A lot of people, they just didn't think. They're not worried. They're not watching. They're not watchful. They don't understand. Have been taken advantage of. They've had traps laid for them, and other people got rich at their expense. Getting rich with false balances. You know, you don't give the person the right amount. Cheating this person. A root of all evil. One of the evils. Getting wealthy by cheating others. Micah condemns it. Chapter 6, verses 9 through 12. Wealth is not sinful in itself, unless it becomes your priority. Unless it becomes the only thing you think about. Unless it becomes Mammon, the god of wealth. We'll talk more about wealth in our next message.